Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Jules Bill,
I'm back.
Hello.
I'm not fully back. I still think I still don't sound 100%, but I'm getting there. I've still got the vid, still doing the little test, still poking the old throat, and it's still coming back positive. But I can record stuff. I can say things.
To be fair, though, mate, you won't be coughing any more than you usually do on these podcasts. So I welcome you back.
There is a base level of feeling gross that always sort of permeates my being anyway. But so still battling the COVID. Massive thank you, genuinely, to everybody who got in touch to say get well soon. It was really, really nice over the last couple of weeks, because I forget when I first said I had COVID. I've had it since last 2 weeks ago on Wednesday, whatever it is. But yeah, massive thank you to everybody, genuinely. It's very nice to see. But also, this is the Untitled Banner Podcast. I'm Scott Taylor, joined by Jules Gill.
UBP,
where we ask people for various thoughts, whatever they would like us to talk about. And we've got a lovely smattering of stuff, because all sorts of different video game things have kicked off across the last couple of weeks.
Yes.
So we'll get to as many talking points as we can. First thing is from Lee Go Brick, great name, who says, what do we think of, he says, do we think that Rockstar are going to phone it in for the Max Payne 1 and 2 remake? I expect disappointment, or do we think we'll be pleasantly surprised? Now, Rockstar aren't making the Max Payne remake. It's Remedy. Remedy apparently went to Rockstar and said they wanted to remake Max Payne 1 and 2 with a, they called it like a AAA Remedy budget. So it'll be something like Control, I guess. But what's your thoughts on all this?
Well, I mean, the fact that Remedy have just basically said, look, we don't trust you with our property, so please let us actually go back and make it. I feel very confident that they will deliver something amazing, because when you look at what Control did, it basically took a lot of elements that Max Payne did, like especially with time manipulation and like the way that it had a free-flowing approach to combat. If they can take those and add a layer of polish onto the original Max Payne, I am here for it. However, I do worry that they, with a AAA budget, they might look at things that they have made in the original game and see them as stuff that needs to be changed. Like, I, for one, personally love the sort of film noir comic book aesthetic
they had
from those, like, cutscenes. I don't want them to approach them with a level of, let's make them in full, gritty, realistic 3D, because it was that... It's that sense of a, this is a good cop gone bad story that lent itself well to that sort of, like, that grim... like noir film the aesthetic. I feel like it kind of taps into that Sin City vibe that was very popular at the time. And I feel like if we change that and turn it into just like a generic action blockbuster that does tread the same things, that the aesthetic change might actually mean that the message is lost somewhere as well.
It's like, for me, I adore Max Payne so much. Like when I actually saw this announcement, I was like, cool, fine. I play Max Payne 1 and 2 quite a lot anyway. They just released Max Payne 3 on backwards compatibility last year, but it doesn't have a 60 frames a second patch. I was like, well, you patch that first before you go back to Max Payne 1 and 2. Play Max Payne 3 in 30 FPS in 2022.
That must be so weird.
Just feels really weird, because that game's so gorgeous and deserves way more eyes on it. But yeah, they remade Alan Wake last year or the year before, just like, you know, and almost entirely a visual overhaul. So I kind of wonder how they draw the line on Max Payne, because Max Payne 1 and 2 feel like PC shooters. They don't feel like console shooters.
You're
rotating the camera more than you feel like you're actually moving a character. Like if you contrast them to Max Payne 3, that character has way more weight to him and stuff. So I wonder how much they go back to like the feel of Max Payne, and if they want to change it to be more in line with 3, and then maybe we get some sort of trilogy release or something. But yeah, I am that comic book thing that you mentioned, though, was really interesting because their budget was so small back then. It was a tiny
They just had to make do, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, it was
like no offense. Like you go back and look at the game, it looks like like absolute crap. Like it's not a good looking game. And
they took a lot of like stitched them on.
Yeah. There's a lot of like areas where the environments especially could be expanded and improved on, because imagine like, you know, they go through certain sections of like the subway terminals and stuff like that, where every room felt the exact same. Yes. Like it would be great to go through those same areas, but have like trash floating about in this sort of like gunfights, like loads of extra obstacles to hide, like bricks and the tiles of like the subway things being blasted apart, like in the Matrix. Oh, each hit. Sick, that would actually be really cool.
If they double down on the physics side of it, like really enhance the Matrix
but
lobby
this,
fight.
This is the thing. You and I always go back to this. The thing that we want video games to do isn't to just basically push their tech to make things look better. It's to make environments feel more lived in and realistic. Yes. Like you and I always talk about like the golden days of like the engine of all like the crazy like physics like sci-fi shit, like PsyOps, the Mindgate conspiracy and stuff like that. Just mess with physics more. That's what we want to see. It's got extra shine on it.
Well, that's the thing. I don't need any of that opulent, hey look, it's a leaf and it's in 4K if you zoom in. Like I don't care about any of that. Like put the rendering tech into the game. Gameplay comes first every time. But yeah, in terms of the budgetary stuff, that's why Sam Lake, the creative director and the writer, was also Max Payne himself. So I wonder if they go back and they have to actually render that face out. Like you can get a version of that face in Max Payne 3. But I don't
such,
know.
Like, it's such an iconic face, though, isn't it? It just looks like he's being punched in the balls, but smelling a fart at the same time. It's so bad for him.
I hope they take Sam Lake and put him in a really fancy, like, up-res motion capture studio and they actually get to become Max Payne. Because for the anniversary, he put the jacket back on and stuff, which was really cool. But yeah, my default reaction was like, yeah, okay, sure. And Max Payne 1 and 2 are on Xbox already, so whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious what they do to it and if they make it more like Max Payne 3. I just want a patch for Max Payne 3 as well. That's my main thing.
My biggest hope is that if this reignites an interest in the series, that we might be able to see a continuation onto something like Max Payne 4, because even though Max Payne 3 definitely felt in every sense like it concluded a lot of what Max Payne was all about, and it was a very long game as well, so it told everything it needed to tell, I do still think that there's more for Max as a character. Like I still feel like he hasn't fully completed his arc.
You know, in Max Payne 3,
it just seems like he's more acceptance that he's broken. Like, and I don't like that for characters. I want them to actually have a bit more of a redeeming end, you know?
Yeah, I do quite like him wandering off into the sunset. But you could do a Max Payne 4 about him trying to start a new family and finally being able to move on from everything that drove him across 1, 2, and 3. Because 3 is a phenomenal... I love 3 so much, and Howe's writing is so good. It's the only Rockstar, only Max Payne. But yeah, there's that whole thing where this deal, Rockstar apparently are putting up the money, putting up the funds, but Remedy are going to be remaking it using their Northlight engine, I think it's called, which is what they use for Control. And I think the Alan Wake remake as well.
Fantastic stuff.
Hopefully it's all cool. Next question is from Derek McMullen, who says, I've been watching a lot of Zero Punctuation, and I wonder, do you guys agree with Yahtzee that the drive for better and better graphics in AAA is hurting gameplay? Also, Willie Araya says, I was amazed by the lighting and visuals in the Unreal 5 demo, but I'm worried that with such high fidelity, most games will start looking the same. No focus in gameplay innovation. Hopefully there'll be exceptions, but thoughts. We already kind of touched on this before.
Yeah.
But it is true. Like, I mean, the amount of money that is being put into graphical wallop, like for me, compare Horizon Forbidden West's impact with Elden Ring's impact. Elden Ring didn't need the opulence and everything else.
And do you know why? Because it had amazing art direction. That's the thing. Like, direction will always trump technical like milestones. Like, if you, it's not about what tech you have at your disposal, it's how you use
it. It's not the size, it's how you use it.
Apparently so. And like, there are so many indie games that have amazing art styles, which mean that they will forever live on. It's like, I don't understand when they just hype up like, oh, these graphics are going to allow you to see like the individual pores on somebody's face. It's like, unless we're using the photo mode, which every game that necessarily does include now, it isn't like it doesn't matter to me enjoying the plots more. Like, give me a great written story. Put that money into like making sure that your developers aren't in crunch culture. Like things like that. I'd rather have that happen rather than it just be, oh, it looks amazing and has like this amazing veneer. Because if the game is rotten underneath, then it doesn't matter. Like, we all remember the case of the Order 1866?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it's that was an amazing looking game, but because all of the attention went into how that game looked aesthetically, it didn't have any substance beyond that 4-hour gameplay thing. And it was was pretty shallow in terms of the actual gameplay itself.
No, totally. And it's like, I remember reading that Last of Us 2's, the character's pupils dilate based on the amount of light in the room. And I'm like, okay, that's cool, but it has nothing to do with anything. Like, it doesn't make me go, oh, well, the storyline's better then. Like, or it plays better or whatever.
Or the horse testicles shrinking and growing depending on the cold in Red Dead Redemption 2. It's like, okay, cool, you have done that. That is fantastic. And I'm sure that it does create at some very small level a bit more of an immersion factor. But I'm not staring at the horse bollocks the entire time.
In Red Dead 2 as well, like, they have a whole thing where, which is like, some stuff is really cool. Like in Red Dead 2, if you shoot a boat, like a little kayak that someone's standing in, it'll slowly flood with water sink. But at no point did you think to do that in a gameplay mission. At no point do you have to take someone out and they try and get away on a kayak and then you shoot the kayak and beat them.
Make those points actually part of the gameplay mechanics. Yeah. And then that'd be like, it was the classic one, goes back to Metal Gear Solid 2, where somebody found out that the individual ice cubes in the tanker, they actually melt over real time. It's like, fantastic. That is a definitely Hideo Kojima moment. But at the same time, it means nothing whatsoever. No. And it's kind of annoys me that he spent time doing it.
It's like that thing with the dilating pupils or whatever. It's like, if I was in an LA Noir type detective game and I had to study a photo because a witness said they were somewhere and they're actually not because I can prove it because their pupils dilated or something.
Exactly.
Give me that. Like, I want gameplay first. Like, it's not that I'm against opulence in video games, but I don't see enough. If we're talking about bars being raised, the gameplay bar doesn't meet the graphics bar.
And my worry is that it always comes back to the consumer. Like, if you've got a big bloated budget that you have completely wasted on like your shiny puddle effects and stuff like that, at the end of the day, we're the ones fronting the price tag. And unfortunately, the developers are the ones put under pressure to make back that money that they've invested into it. So if somebody gives you like $300 million instead of, I'll give you an extra $100 million on the top of that, if you can make this game look even better. As a developer, if it was in my position, I'd say I really don't want that extra $100 million of pressure to sell the game just because of the fact that it looks better. Like, I want the gameplay to speak for itself and not have to basically make the consumer front my bill.
Well, it's why I thought Horizon was just very safe and quite boring. And it's not like when I put a tweet out the other day, like my top 10 games of the year, and it's like number 7 or something. Like, it's great. It ticks a box. It's fine. It's solid. But something like Sifu or Elden Ring or Ollie Ollie World or whatever is way more standout because they're doing new things. They actually do new things with gameplay. I just like, that whole opulent side of it just doesn't do anything for me anymore.
Sifu is actually a great example of that because would I enjoy Sifu more if it looked better? And I used to think it looked better if it was like, had like those hyper-realistic gameplay, hyper-realistic graphics. No, not in the slightest, because I actually enjoy the fact that a more reserved and almost cartoony approach allows it to take the role of a fable. It feels like you are watching a myth unfold in front of you. And that connects the game to a deeper understanding of its like, you know, Kung Fu history and also the way that it approaches spirituality and stuff like that. So that makes sense. And that art design fits it perfectly. Yep. And it didn't cost them the earth and the moon in order to create.
Well, I'll take a million identifiable, distinguishable art styles over another homogenous, big AAA budget look.
I could pick Avengers Sifu out of a lineup and I couldn't pick like about from the early 2000s to 2010s, like all of the like the drab shooters that came out that used all the same Unreal Engine aspects. Like, I wouldn't be able to pick out those ones, you know?
And it's like, I mean, for me, it kind of goes across, like, I have a whole problem at the minute with like how clean a lot of TV production stuff looks, like the new Halo show or The Witcher, or like there's just a lot of big budget, like the Wheel of Time, the new Game of Thrones, that stuff like that. They all look so clean. The new Lord of the Rings thing, it all looks very clean. And it's just like, well, they're trying to sell you this idea of opulence and like selling a 4K subscription or something, or selling a 4K.
They're trying to sell you an individual image every frame as like, this could be a poster, this could be a poster. It's like, I love it. You can say that that is art. And I love the fact that somebody, you can make this look amazing, but it's not connected to the world. It feels so sterile.
Sterile is a perfect word for it.
Give me the old Star Wars with the beaten up ships. Everything looks dirty and like a bit mucky. That's what I want. I don't want the new hyper clean version where it looks like you've artistically scratched it. Like, remember when it was those trends where you had the ripped jeans and they were like, they came pre-ripped. It's like, it's like the damage doesn't feel natural. So why are you making it look like this? It's very weird.
And so if you get it wrong in the TV space as well, it just feels like a bunch of people standing in a forest. Like, that was my thing with The Witcher. It doesn't feel like they actually live there. Like, that the movie that's coming out in a couple of weeks called The Northman, the next one from Robert Eggers, that actually looks like they live that life, actually looks like a window into that life. But yeah, that's a whole thing for TV and movies, but I feel some of it crossing over into games in regards to what a AAA game should look like and what you can do with that. So yeah, I don't don't necessarily think I'm worried that everything will become too homogenized because the sheer production budget distribution means that you'll have to sort of skew toward different art directions to get your game to look a certain way. Mm-hmm. But I just want to see more of it. I don't see anywhere near enough of it, especially in the upper echelons of game development. Like you said, something like Sifu stands out so much because it is a great nexus of solid art direction, solid gameplay, everything else. Mm-hmm. And it's why, to me, Horizon is boring as hell. Next thing from Stuart, who says, there is no point in pot noodle having other flavors besides chicken and mushroom. The other flavors are subpar attempts. Do we agree or disagree, Jules?
Okay, so obviously you know that I wasn't always a vegan, so I have tasted the cheese rainbow. I've ridden the I was going to say the meat bus, but that's an interesting terminology there.
The meat subway.
When it comes to flavors of pot noodle, I sampled them all, mate. I was a big Bombay bad boy lover back in the time. I was loved the chow mein one that they did.
Yeah,
they even did the rare limited edition ones that came in. It was like an entire roast dinner one in the UK. I don't know if you ever tried that one. That was an
interesting
one.
You're way more connoisseur than me with these things.
Well, I say a connoisseur. I was just down the pound shop every week, and I was like, "Oh, that'll do," sort of thing. Like, I genuinely think that if you're gonna come out here and put your little soapbox down and stand on top of it and tell me to my face that chicken and mushroom is the best flavor, I'm sorry, mate. I'm just gonna get a big big whopper of beef and tomato and push it into each of your eye sockets and say, "There you go. There we go."
This is a wider question. Would you take beef over chicken as a general thing? I know from your pre-vegan days.
But well, still. This is the thing, isn't it? Like, chicken goes with everything. Beef at least has a real substantially different texture and flavor. I feel like chicken, so many people say like, "Oh, this tastes like chicken." And it feels like such a castaway thing of like, yeah, it's a generic meat type. Mm-hmm. Like, so a good chicken is amazing. Anything less than that is just cool. I'm chewing a piece of cud.
I kind of find that fried chicken is so high up there that nothing else beats it. So
yeah,
are
you thinking that it's the skin, the fried chicken skin? Because it doesn't actually, as much as people want to tout it, very few fried chicken places allow their flavors to seep into the chicken meat itself. It is all on the skin and never, it is literally the skin deep, you know?
It's true. I'm not someone who strips the skin off though. You know, some people do that thing where they just get the chicken skin. And I'm not a chicken skinsman. I want to bite through all of it.
Is that, I don't know why KFC and places like that haven't just been like, look,
a bucket of skin.
Yeah, you know, there you go, like a skin flagon. Like,
I think you can't get a bucket of skin. I'm sure
you can't.
Giant Bomb podcast, there was a one where Vinny mentioned getting a bucket of skin jobs. And I don't know if you just ended up gripping it, but I'm sure that was a thing. But the fried chicken I had in New York from Stickies was the best chicken I've ever had. So it's going forward, please sound out your best fried chicken places.
Also tell us the rankings of the pot noodles as well.
Yes. I haven't had that many pot noodles. I will back the chow mein one though. It's like, can't say the chicken mushroom is the best. McAllister NYC, who says in regards to all the E3 cancellation for this year, do we think that in-person gaming showcases will become a thing of the past? Also, don't you just love the backstab animations in Elden Ring? I don't, McAllister NYC, because they're the same ones from Dark Souls 1. We've had the same game for 10 years.
There's a few new ones because obviously they added in a few new weapon types, but yeah, it does feel very satisfying though, and I think that's because they didn't change them, because it's like, yeah, you know what you're getting with this. It's like the old whoomph and then a whoomph.
It is that little delay and then you like wrench it out of them again. I did a kill on some giant lizard thing last night where I jabbed it in the eye and I sort of like flicked the blade downward and the thing flew off backwards and I was like, that was cool. Why couldn't I do that on everything? It's only been on like one thing.
It would be nice if every single enemy type had their own like special animation that you could trigger for it. It would be quite cool.
I would be a big fan of.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What was the main question again? Sorry, before I start thinking about it. E3 stuff, wasn't it? So, yeah, yes.
Do you think in-person gaming stuff will go away? No, I don't think so.
I don't think it'll go away. And I am actually really sad to see E3 go, because it feels like that is a big sort of drop from the general gaming consciousness that we have. And I don't know why. It feels like every single developer wants to have their own thing. They want to have their own celebration of their own games and not share anything. But that level of like gatekeeping of the entire industry doesn't make sense in the world that we live in. We live in worlds where consoles are moving towards streaming platform services, like we've said before, to where every single developer and publisher is going to unify onto certain platforms, and they have to work together and agree to sell their games to the widest possible market. So having them do this sort of almost petty showcase of just going like, oh, these are our games, it's like, okay, fine. Like, just,
I mean, I think it serves a good purpose in terms of getting like a mass public, like letting the mass public have a window into what's coming up and let them get excited about certain things. But I think if you're going to make the show work, because obviously the reason E3 is dying is because the ESA suck. Like the parent company behind E3 were charging like 6-7 figures for hosting, and obviously all those companies, like you said, were just like, well, we can just stream this, or we can just put this out as a demo or whatever, we don't need to pay your money. E3 is not worth that much. But I think the idea of an in-person play session, that energy in those rooms or those arenas or whatever, that is really cool, and there is something to that in terms of seeing big trailers and playing a demo early or whatever. So I think those will come back, but I think it'll be more mainstream as we go forward.
Like when you and I went to EGX a couple of years ago, like, it's those moments when you go in and you actually just, you witness where gaming is at that moment in time. Fun. And it feels amazing to be a part of it. And it's that connection that makes you walk away and think, oh, I'm not just going to see a name or a trailer in like a couple of weeks' time and say, I might get that game. You'll go back to it and think, I remember waiting like 45 minutes to an hour just to get 10 minutes alone with like Doom Eternal. Like, I want this game because I have tasted it. And I remember the anticipation, the excitement, the hype. Like, it's something that you can't exchange for in online streaming.
I also think, like, I mean, there was a moment where we were doing loads of coverage and stuff, and then we split off at one point and you went to sort of have a bit wander around the indie space. I think I was in a queue for something, so you were like, I'm gonna go see what else there is. And I remember you coming back being like, I've just found that we found some cool little indie games. And I think that's really fun. Like, window shopping of video games is really fun. Like, seeing them all ready to be played is really cool. And you found that game, which now I'm blanking on the name of, that was the Roll Cage spiritual successor. That thing was called. And we ended up, that thing at Rift or whatever it's called. And we ended up playing that just over and over and over again. We had other big things to get to, but we did like 10 races in that thing. And it was just awesome. And like I said, I think that has a certain value to it in terms of just being like, I'm going to hop on this and play for a bit. And you can just try things out. And the developers are right there and just talking to devs and talking to those teams. That's really cool too.
That's really important, having that connectivity to the actual game itself. Like, I know that some people, when we were talking to like the bigger games, like the people who were designing Hitman, people who designed Doom Eternal, they were obviously tight-lipped about what they could and couldn't share. But there was a few like little nuggets here and there that they spread. But when you got down to like the indie level, they were willing to lay bare the entire game's premise, what they were building, their design ethos, and all of these things that made you get excited for them, because you could see how much of a passion project it was. You don't get that same level of investment, emotional intensity, by watching a trailer, for the most part. Like, if we were watching it the same game of that Grip game of playing out, you might even see people just immediately go, oh, it's a Roll Cage ripoff. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's that sort of thing. And it's like, it's almost a negativity because people just immediately look at it, dismiss it, or accept it. That's it. You get a split second reaction. But seeing it in person and talking to the devs and finding out how committed they were to making something feel both nostalgic and moving it forward, I was like, yeah, that I'm buying into your sort of like life story now. Yeah. And I like that.
And it's like in-person gaming stuff has gone away so much, like split screen multiplayer is gone, like things like that. But it's like, you know, you can, in those spaces, you might see a fighting game and someone's waiting for a challenger, or like, you know, that in our case, it was a Crash Team Racing tournament going on.
Yeah.
And it's like stuff like that. And I'm like, we miss those things. We grew up with that energy in the 90s, the 2000s, like being around people playing games and like with online connections or whatever. It's not as much, it's not in front of you as much, but I think you can miss that energy of a group of people watching a game be played, whether even if it's a solo thing. I think those things will continue, but I think that they'll get more mainstreamy.
Yeah, it also had like one other aspect that I loved, which was every single gaming convention that we've been to always has a section to dedicate to retro games. Like, they always have like a few consoles set up here and there from like old games of the past. Like, and it's lovely seeing like kids and younger gamers going up to them being like, oh, this is like what came before. Isn't that like amazing to see like what was acceptable back in the day, or like what people put up with or couldn't do? And it's just like, yeah, I feel like, as much as it moves stuff forward each time that we get to these E3 events or equivalents, it's all definitely about looking back at where the gaming industry came from as well. And once you can have that, you can truly appreciate or depreciate what's going on in the industry today.
Well, I like standing in a room of gaming ephemera, like giant statues. I mean, back then, like some stuff was like Overwatch characters or whatever it is. It's like you're surrounded by all these cool things that you only see in digital form, and them all being physical is a fun rush, and then getting to interact with everything is really cool. Next question from Morgan Eyes Only. This is an interesting talking point. He says, how does it feel when you have to advertise things you're fundamentally against? For example, when you guys were bashing Battlefield, but at the start of every podcast, there was a minute long advert saying how great Battlefield 2042 was. Is it frustrating, or is it just part of the job?
It's a tough one. In this industry, as everyone knows, we won't sugarcoat it. You've got to pay the bills. And for our employers, obviously there are certain things that we're tasked with. And if we disagree with stuff fully, they are pretty receptive to that, and they will say you don't have to do that, like if you truly don't believe in it. But there have been some like misguided times where you thought that a game was going to be better than it was, or you pre-recorded stuff based on the demos and stuff that you've been sent early, and then the game comes out and it's not in a proper state because of launch issues and stuff like that. That can obviously have like a detrimental effect on where we sit as a personal opinion and the image we put out as a company.
Scheduling is a really big part of it, because you sign off on entire windows of sponsorship stuff, and like you're hoping for the best. Like, I mean, everything running in, like for example with Battlefield, everything in the run up to that game's launch looked really solid. Like, there was that early playtest thing that like was a bit more worrying, but we were prepping stuff for that launch window, like as any company would do. But also I honestly draw very specific lines between this stuff. Like, we do sponsored content, and we do editorials and lists and whatever else, and because someone's paid us for a sponsored thing, we don't owe them lifetime positive coverage, nor do we owe them anything in between those adverts. Like, that's just not how life works, at least not for me.
Like, there's been a few times where it's been quite actually a pleasure to work with some of the people on their promotion. Like when we did some stuff for Sekiro, it's like a game we all believed in, and that is, there's no better feeling than walking out there and feeling 100% confident that it's going to be an absolute banger. But sometimes it hits you for a loop. Like, I remember you and I personally went to the Star Wars Battlefront 2 preview event,
and which was awesome. Obviously,
it was awesome. That's the thing. If you were to take away our thoughts from that one point where we got to play the first level of the single player, and we got to play a little bit of like other scenes as well, and we got to have a demo and other bits, we walked away from that saying, this game's going to be an absolute stone cold classic. It's going to be a success. And you report on that in the moment. That is what it is. Obviously, you don't have the foresight to see what the loot box shenanigans
came out afterwards.
Well,
they weren't talking about any of that stuff anyway.
Yeah, because they were, and they even said there wasn't going to be any, or there wasn't like there weren't plans for it. Like, it's all about like how they carefully word it so that they can get around it afterwards. And it's like, it can feel a little bit like a slap in the face from developers who essentially need us to promote their games as much as we need them to provide stuff to promote to stay relevant. It's a very weird symbiotic relationship that we have with them, and it can be quite harsh when you're just there like, cool, I've literally just said your game is going to be the best. And now you turned around, you absolutely dunked on yourself and the rest of the fan base.
It's kind of like, it's all
like an idiot personally for saying it. Like,
yeah, we have like full editorial creativity. Like, you, if you think something sucks, we can do 10 reasons it sucks. Like, or we can, yeah. Like, you know, you can do whatever you need to do. And so it is always weighing those things up. But like, yeah, you're not going to not be sponsored by people because we have a big enough platform. And then, like Jules said, it pays the bills. So it is just, it is walking both those lines simultaneously, or walking that line between the two. But I've never been fundamentally against anything. Like, at the end of the day, they're video games, they're entertainment. It's not a real world thing that I'm pretending I like, that I hate genuinely. Like, yeah.
Do you know what actually has been quite fun? There are some companies out there who are just aware that their public reception isn't the best. Who are the people who make Raid Shadow Legends? Like, if they realized that they were just becoming much memed because they were everywhere, they just were like, they were almost being despised of because of the fact that they were everywhere in everybody's videos. And so they just turned around and said, like, look, you can rip the piss out of us. You can just do whatever you want. Like, as long as you've played the game and you have had fun with it and I've prepared to do a little story about it, you can just basically just say this game is weird, like it's like over the top, like it's everywhere. Like, they were really relaxed with that sort of stuff.
I think as well, like, we never did all out, this game sucks, don't buy it, and then we ended it. We always had reasons, we had a constructive feedback. Josh was playing it constantly, and as was I and as was Benroy when that game was out. So we've never done a video where we just said this thing sucks, bottom line. It's always
no, but they allowed us a bit more tongue-in-cheek affair of like how we approached it.
But I think, like, you know, if you do one of those videos where you say this thing sucks or you shouldn't buy this or whatever, and that gets, then if that ever gets pulled up by a PR, which is extremely rare, like that someone gets in touch and says, oh, we didn't like this thing that you did, and you can then have that conversation and be like, well, here are the issues with it that we pointed out that the rest of the world is also talking about as well.
Yeah,
and that's usually fine. Like, it's hella rare that that's ever actually happened anyway, but in the you know, when we've had to like back up our criticism, I can, and we can, I get the bleed over where it would be cool if we endorse every single thing that we're talking about, and most of the time we don't take those contracts if it's something that we hate. Also with Battlefield as well, like, it wasn't a complete lost cause. Like, that was always the thing that Josh was trying to bring up, because we had so many conversations in between those videos of Josh going like, well, I don't hate it, I'm not even that against it, here's the things that I like about it, but also we're going to point out the failures of the game. Like, that was a very unique instance, and obviously, like, that's probably why Morgan I was only bringing it up, because that did feel like it had a foot in both sides. It was like, this game is an absolute tire fire, but also it's kind of cool in these areas, but it's not a Battlefield game in full, so we should address that.
I guess there is like one closing thing to say as well, which is that because we are a company that is made up of a collection of different mindsets and like different attitudes towards gaming, we all love gaming, but we all love completely different types of games. It can create the divide between what the company's image is actually saying and what the individual is actually saying, because it's like, I might personally have hated Battlefield, but like, and I might have said so in like lists and stuff like that, but like, it doesn't mean that everyone overall hated Battlefield.
No,
so
it's like,
which is the voice you want to listen to? Is it mine, or is it the company's, or is it like whoever's? Like,
yeah, and it's like, you know, obviously they have advert packages that they want to get put together. And like I said, like, there is always going to be some level of genuine feeling from us as to this game is worth covering at all. Otherwise we would have turned that advert down. But that's what makes something like Battlefield so fascinating, because it did have flaws, it did have positives, it had everything. And the way that the scheduling and everything worked out, it did mean that both those things were together in the same podcast, with like, we would open up the podcast was maybe called something like Battlefield's a Huge Disappointment, but the opening thing that you hear is Josh talking about Battlefield 2042. So I get why that's an absolute conflict necessarily in a specific podcast. Final question from Jacob Sawyer, who says, since Lord of the Rings, Rings of Power and Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon drop within 12 days of one another, which are you looking forward to the most, and which do you think will come out on top?
Do you know what? I'm going to be overwhelmed. I'm going to be overwhelmed by choice here, because I just don't know which one to watch first, because I'm quite slow when it comes to like getting on the bandwagon. Like, everyone will have already finished watching season 5 by the time that I jump on season 1, because I kind of like to take my time. I like to wait for the hype to die down. But this time I'm just like, Kerry and I are like looking around thinking, what should we watch next? What's the next thing we want to watch? So it's like, this is the perfect opportunity to pick one and stick to it. I don't know, because I want to divide my attention between 3 different shows and not be invested because of it.
I'm curious how they go down, because I feel like Game of Thrones reputation was so done after the last season. And I feel like all the people were talking about how little the trailers for House of the Dragon were being watched and how little social media traffic was being done about it. And then the Lord of the Rings, the teaser they put out looked, like I mentioned that with the whole Halo show and stuff, looked too so sterile and clean. Yeah. And so for me, I'm actually not bothered. I'll check the pilots out for both, but I'm not looking forward to either. I look at the Lord of the Rings movies as a masterpiece that's already been done. So it's in a hell of a high bar to get to. And Game of Thrones, it's going to have to do a lot to win me back, considering how much of a mess that final season was.
I feel like Game of Thrones is on the back foot, like you said, because of its public and critical reception to the last season. And I do think that people are just going to really try and meme on it hard. I get this feeling like every little thing is going to be dragged over the coals. Like, and probably quite unfairly, because there are probably some people here who are giving this even more effort because they want to prove that this is like the Phoenix moment for the series. But I just feel like it's just going to be harshed on. The Lord of the Rings one, I'm actually really excited for out of all of them, because I don't know what stories are left to tell, because I don't know what angle they're going to be approaching from. But
it's like the really ancient stuff, I think. It's like, I haven't been following it too much, but it's set like thousands of years before the Fellowship stuff.
But it's like, how are they going to try? Are they going to try and do a Star Wars thing and try and tie everything into the current Lord of the Rings canon? Or are they going to allow organic stories to develop and just have them completely separate? And I really hope it's the latter. I don't like fan service-y stuff. Like, I finally got around to watching Book of Boba Fett, and I was like loving it. And then it just was like, here's everything you remember, and let's just try and push forward with other shows. And it's like, it just became a real advertising campaign, really heavily weird, in the second half of that.
AI version of Luke Skywalker that's not even Mark Hamill at all. It's just an AI voice pattern thing in a CG body, and that's what it gets.
And it was
weird,
because it tried to tie everything back into the established stuff, or just make sense within its own thing. But I was like, mate, you could have gone for another season without having to do all of that.
I'm curious how much the Rings of Power stuff, like, because obviously it's called Rings of Power to contend with Game of Thrones. So like there is that. I'm curious how much it can manage to stand alone, like on its 2 feet kind of thing. It's weird that we haven't seen more of it yet, but I guess we'll see what other teasers and stuff drop towards the release. But that's going to be an interesting showdown across the summer, because there's not that much other big entertainment stuff out.
So apart from Is It Cake, mate, obviously.
What's this cake thing? I saw you tweeting.
All right. Okay, so
is it not cake anymore?
Oh, don't. Okay, I'm going to explain it to you and why I think that it is a literal pile of steaming garbage.
I might assume, is the first episode like a sewing machine? There's like three sewing machines and one that's not a sewing machine. And they just go, that's not cake.
Right, okay. So this is it. This is the entire premise of the game. You summed it up immediately. What you do is you just get a load of real life objects, and one of them is it cake? One of them is cake, and you have to ask, is it cake? And you just get like all these people, and like they're amazing bakers. Do not get me wrong. Like the cake making that they do is insane. But it's just that, like, Kerry was watching it with me, and she was able to pick out of like five examples, every single one immediately. She's like, that's clearly cake. And I was like, how? And it's like, because it doesn't look real. And I'm just like, oh yeah, now you said that. It's like, oh yeah, it doesn't. The real, it's like, it's not even like the same shape, it's like too
I watched
perfect,
the very or... beginning of that, and then I turned this off immediately, because I was like, is this all this is? Like,
it
was like,
literally all it is.
Here's the four things.
Oh man, the host has got to get in a bin. I hate him. Like, I'm sure he's a lovely guy, I'm sure that he's like completely nice person, but my god, is he grating. The first thing he does is he like comes out on the first episode and he pulls out like a samurai sword, and he just goes like, I've got a sword, and they didn't even tell me about this. And I'm like, this isn't a kids TV show. I know that we're talking about cake here, but this is serious, damn it.
I don't know how you make that angle last a whole show. Like, is it cake? No.
Right.
Is it cake?
What you need for this show is to have a host that's kind of like Jack D levels of sardonic, like really sour. So it's just like,
I haven't heard that name in a long time.
Just imagine him just going like, is it cake? I don't know. Who cares? Who cares? Like, literally, just turn the show into a skit, like parody of itself about game shows, right? And you get the contestants on, and every week you just freak them out by the guy just not being invested in the game show itself. I would watch the hell out of that show.
I would watch it out as someone who can't get out of the room until they've answered so many cake-based questions, and just watch them slowly lose their minds.
And it's like, and the host is there, like, slumped over the little podium, reading from his cue cards, and he's there like, oh my god, like, just like, come on, like, how, and he just constantly is breaking character, and he's just there like, how long have we got left on shooting? 45 minutes. Oh my Christ.
Well, that's clearly cake. Come on, we're not even trying anymore. That's just an actual cake.
Or instead of using the like knife to cut it, at least make it more interesting and have him get his fist right and just smash the cake like that. And basically, he's got the 50-50 of not hitting the right cake, and he just smashes it onto a real object. It really hurts.
Machines, whatever he needs to do.
Yeah, just punch a sewing. I would watch somebody punch a sewing machine and call it a game show. I'd love it.
We
could
do
a
version
bang
of that. Yeah, I would say that. That's a hell of a lot more compelling than Netflix's Is It Cake? I don't know what the hell I was going to talk about. Probably the end of this show. This has been the Entitled Planet Podcast. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gale.
Thank you very much for having me. Is It Cake?
And also come find us on Twitter. I'm @StyleShellP89. Mr. Jules is.
I'm at Retro J, but the O is a zero.
Beautiful. Thank you to everybody for sending in their questions. And thanks again for wishing me the best. Hopefully I'll sound even better next week. But for now, we'll catch you then.
It's on the mend. UBP, UBP, UBP.
UBP.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.